Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Herz.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to Anchor Down. And listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Max Herz. I'm your host, Monday, October the 5th. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. And many of you are hearing us over the air on 102.5 The Game between 8 and 9 o'clock on this Monday night. The Vanderbilt Commodores are 0-2 to start their All-SEC season after an impressive, closer-than-expected showing week one, losing just 17-12 at Texas A&M. They come back home and appear to regress a bit, losing 41-7 at home to LSU, who lost opening weekend against Mississippi State. The Tigers take care of business. It was 21-7 at halftime. Vanderbilt did not score in the second half. Vanderbilt only scored once in the game. They certainly had chances to do more and did not do it. The game could have and should have been closer, but it was not close. LSU pulled away and won what turned into a snoozer later on. Ken Seals looked pretty good again, the true freshman quarterback in his second SEC start. The offensive line appeared to take a step back. The defensive backs were a big liability for Vanderbilt in this game. The front seven was not as good as they were in the opener, but still had some moments. Overall, just a drop-off across the board for Vandy. Javion Marlow, who was on the podcast last Thursday, continues to be Vanderbilt's best offensive player, not named Ken Seals. The running back had another very strong game for the Commodores, carrying 17 times for 83 yards, averaging just under 5 yards a carry, and he seems to be Vanderbilt's number one back going forward. After Amir Abdur-Rahman was the primary target for Ken Seals in Aggieland, he was barely a factor in the second game of the year, just one catch for 4 yards, had what looks like a drop. I still can't tell. I've watched this play like 10 times. I still can't tell if on the fourth down and medium play where Ken Seals went his way, Abdur-Rahman dropped the ball or if it hit his defender. I think he dropped it or at least touched it. But anyway, Abdur-Rahman not involved, unfortunately, for Vanderbilt. Cam Johnson, 3 receptions for 63 yards. One of the two big ones that helped pad that total was in garbage time later on. He did have a 40-yard catch when it still mattered. Ben Bresnahan, the Commodore tight end, 3 catches for 31 and the Commodore's only touchdown. We'll talk about him again in a second. We'll go deeper on some of the storylines in this game later on in the podcast, but first we are going to bring in our recurring guest analyst, former Commodore offensive lineman and team captain Bruno Reagan. Will be joining us from Clarksville momentarily to discuss what he's seen so far from Ken Seals, the offensive line, and a couple of kind of inside access in the room points I wanted to raise about the Vanderbilt offense from someone who played on it and was a leader on it for 5 years from 2014 to 2018 when he was part of Derek Mason's first 5 teams at Vanderbilt football. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Now to bring on the man who we are very lucky to have on every other Monday here on the Anchor Down Podcast, Bruno Reagan's second bi-weekly appearance on the podcast. Bruno, I am very curious to hear what you have to say about the first two Vanderbilt football games. Thanks for doing this again, and tell us what's on your mind after 2 losses.
It's losses to some good teams. Obviously, the first game was it's a tough one to swallow because, you know, they were in it the whole time. I didn't know how it was going to go. Usually I could give an opinion on how a game's going to play out, but obviously the spread for the first game was like 30-something points, and then they come within one possession, which probably gave people a lot of hope, especially after LSU came down. You know, they were 0-1 after a shock of a missed state. So, and it's easy to tell that this isn't LSU from last year, but, I mean, talent-wise, it's easy to tell out there. But there was just something I don't know. There was just something I noticed was we just look smaller in stature compared to the other teams. Like, you know, we'll have our studs and our guys who have played consistently here and there, but we look really small. And I know when that when me and when Mason had his first recruiting classes, you know, we didn't have like the top recruits or anything, but we did have guys who had who were long, fast, could cover the field, you know, SEC statures to fill in. But I think I don't know if this is intentional or not, but it just seems we have a smaller team out on the field. And if you're a small team, you have to play fast. But I think that's why people see things like tackling issue. But, you know, defense obviously isn't my forte. Offense is. And offensively, we saw the same schemes that we would usually do. You know, it's pro style. A lot of people were getting, you know, on Twitter, Facebook, or social media, a lot of people were getting upset at the run-run pass. But if you want to have an efficient offense in the pro style, that's exactly how it's going to be. Screens are a tricky one because they're the obvious go-tos in things like second and third and longs. But some teams just, you know, screens come down to the tiniest and tiniest details. So with what we have, some people call a makeshift O-line, you know, the timing, and a true freshman QB, the timings, everything might be off to make a screen perfect. So that's, I mean, we have I think our top rusher was Marlowe, and he averaged nearly 5 yards a rush, which is extremely good. It's a consistent, efficient thing. But it would just be one thing after another, whether it was a penalty or a loss of yardage on the play. Those things would stall our drives. And yeah, I mean, it was just all around. LSU was just the better team that day. I mean, it was a little back and forth at first, I thought, but eventually they just started running away with it.
Bruno Reagan, former Vanderbilt O-lineman, is our guest talking about the 2020 Commodores. You brought up Ken Seals. The freshman gets the first two starts of the season. Do you think he played better in the first game than in the second game necessarily, or there just isn't enough around him to give him a chance?
It's not that there's not enough around him to give him a chance. There's enough around him to give him a chance. But being a true freshman, I mean, the kid's practically not even a year out of high school, so it's tough. I'll say this about Ken Seals. I think he has more physical tools than probably Kyle did his freshman year, like at the same time as each other. You know, Ken Seals might be a better prospect type player. I mean, Kyle's helping coach him right now. So, and I don't know Ken Seals personally, so I don't know things like how quickly he'll pick up the offense or the timings or the, you know, it looks like they're not doing too many. Like Kyle, for example, would have a lot of options to change the plays into looks we liked. We knew like power into this look. Like if the defense was lined up, we could go to the right side with the zone or to the left side with the power, and depending on which defense they showed us, you know, which we had the stats on which percentage of a better run would be. I don't know if Ken's there yet. You know, probably not. That's a lot to take in. Quarterback is the hardest position on the field by far. But I do see the physical tools he has, and I mean, he's throwing, you know, the arm, it's not like he's Brett farming the throws in, but he's throwing them into nice windows. He's giving his receivers chances to make plays. So, and there's the occasional underthrow or behind the shoulder type throw. Like on, there was like third and five, so they were running the slant. He would throw the ball a little behind. But overall, I think Ken looks extremely promising. Now, when you're year six in and you know you have to rely on a true freshman QB, I mean that's a tough thing to do because obviously like we're 0-2 right now, so it's going to take time. It's not going to be like, you know, we're chasing a bowl game this year, or we should be. Like, we can compete with some of these teams, but, you know, it's looking rough at first right now.
Bruno Reagan's with us, former Vandy O-lineman. What do you got on the O-line so far this season? We talked a lot before the season. How do you think it's played out?
The first game, I was really impressed. I mean, there was, you know, I don't like calling people out or, like, there are definitely weak points. I will say I think I was extremely impressed with Grant Miller. I've always been high on Grant. I mean, not just because Grant's my buddy or anything, but I've always truly thought Grant, like, you know, if Grant can figure out the whole thing, which he has done by far, you know, he's stronger than me, faster than me, more athletic than me. Like he's the guy. So I'm really high on Grant. I think he'll have a chance to play on Sundays. Drew fit in there really well. I was super excited watching him pull on powers. I mean, he looked good. I saw our tackle situation switch from last week to this week. I think it did. I can't remember if because Baptiste is right tackle, and it looked like they flipped tackles, and there was a new one in today, or at A&M. I can't remember off the top of my head. It looked like they did regress from the second game. Obviously, the things like the screens aren't working real well. You know, it's not like it just doesn't look good out in the open space. But they're getting some movement on things like the inside zone and stuff. But that's the thing about playing O-line is, I mean, you know, you play D-line, you can get you can get ran through the whole game, have like two or three good plays, and you know, it says two or three sacks, and you get ran through the whole game, you look like a star. But if you're an O lineman, you know, you have three bad plays, it's a bad day. So I think that's the deal with the O lineman. I don't know what our depth looks like either. So we have this, they call it makeshift O line. It looks serviceable to me up front, but I just don't know, like, because football is a tough game. It's a full contact game. You know, people go down. That's just the nature of it. So I don't know what it's going to look like when we get later into the season.
So here's how it went down the first 2 weeks with the Vandy O-line. Texas A&M, the same five O-linemen played every single offensive snap. Tyler Steen, Dan Dawkins, Grant Miller, Drew Birchmeyer, Connor Mignone. Then this game against LSU, as soon as the second series, there were changes. True freshman Bradley Ashmore came on for a lot of snaps, mostly at right tackle. And who they took out rotated. At first, Dan Dawkins came out. Connor Mignone went from right tackle to left guard with the true freshman coming in at right tackle. We also saw some sets where Birchmeyer came out at right guard. So I think there were three different looks that they gave beyond the starting lineup. So four different lines. You mentioned that you saw some differences. What do you think the goal of that was?
So this is an interesting point from a coaching perspective. And it might not be the answer people like, but it sticks with me because, like for example, when we played Alabama my junior year, I believe, as a player, it's our job to think in our heads, you know, there's no reason we should go out and win that. Like, we're stepping on the field. We're grown men. Like, you know, we have pride. That it's our job to go compete to win. But on a coaching standpoint, they're going to try and take these opportunities to find out what's real, what's worse, and what's not. So I don't have the game film like I would want to go back and just watch. I watch on TV like everybody else, you know. I don't have any special access. But so if they saw something during the game and they, you know, after the grading period, they were like, you know, we're weak here and here, and obviously they're trying to they might have used this game to rotate some people in to try and find the best five. Obviously Tyler Steen and Grant Miller, they're the two most talented offensive linemen by far. Both of those guys have Sunday All-SEC potential. I thought Drew did well, but you know they're trying to find out these interiors. You know, the guard play has always been it's weird because guard is a mindset position, truly, because the center tells you exactly what to do, and you don't have to look through certain keys like tackle does. In guard, you basically get told what to do, and it's your job to make a difference, to ball and push out these holes and get to the second level and be great in open space. So if they need to rotate, they probably use this LSU game to find those guys. And even though as a center for Grant, it probably sucked having, you know, different guys in because different guys block different ways, have different timings. But the coaching staff said, if we want to win some games this year, you know, we need to find the best five, and we're going to see who steps up against LSU to do it.
I'll get to see the snap count numbers later in this week. Those come through from ESPN Stats Info on Thursday, so I'll be curious to see exactly how those numbers panned out. But it was three different looks, Mignone and the true freshman Bradley Ashmore both played a couple of different positions as things moved around. So, yeah, really interesting to hear your perspective on that, and we'll see how much Ashmore plays going forward. I imagine, Bruno, he's a candidate to pass Mignone potentially in the next couple of games.
Yeah, they're also looking at Mignone in the guard spot too, and
right.
it might not be that he beat Mignone out at tackle. It might be that they need Mignone in the guard spots more so, and you know whoever he replaces at the guard might not have the frame to play tackle. So and that's how it works. You know, it's like when I moved to center. It's not like I moved to center because I got beat out at guard. It's because we needed a center. We needed a center bad. So that's probably where the frame of mind is coming. And you never know these looks until you go out and play the game. So so what they'll do is they'll have the ones out there for most of camp, try and get them as many reps as they can, you know, and do the best they can with it. And then when they roll out the game and it doesn't give you the performance you want, I mean, you have to make the switches early in the season. So I expected they were going to move around some guys because, I mean, they also need to work out the depth because the backups aren't going to have to play this year. I mean, there's going to be injuries. And it's not so obviously. And I noticed Coach Mason hasn't hesitated to burn these true freshmen's red shirts. Like that quarterback played, you know, the O lineman played. So these kids are getting playing time, which is good. I mean, that's good for them. Being a true freshman playing in the SEC, that's no that's no little thing. So it'll help with their things like their mental and stuff, but it's growing pains, which sucks, because, you know, you want to, as a fan, you want to see the team go out there and be a solid team, but that's just not where the team's at right now.
Former Commodore center and guard Bruno Reagan out of Clarksville is joining us right now for his bi-weekly appearance here on the Anchor Down podcast. Bruno, I have two questions for you about the offense separate from O-line play. By the way, I was about to use this term, and I'm not going to use it. We need a better term for people who touch the ball than skill position guys, right, as an O-lineman?
I feel like it's the only people that touch the ball, right?
Right, that's what I always say.
Because we're not, as O-linemen, we're not skilled. I mean, there's probably one in like 20 linemen that could do what those guys do. So I mean, I think skills. I know I couldn't go out there and run those routes. I think skills are fair.
But you don't think what you did requires any skill, in the purest form of the word?
I get what you're saying, but Dude, you stumped me. I guess we're skilled, but maybe it's just so punched into my head that I just think of the skinny guys as skilled and we're just the big uglies, but that's probably what it is.
You're the professional. I'll leave it to you. But we'll ask about the skinny guys now. We saw this the last couple of years with Javion Marlowe. Now he's the starting running back. Before, he was mostly a gadget guy because there wasn't an every down spot for him. This year, we've seen it with Jaden Harrison, redshirt freshman wide receiver from Pearl Cone. He's only been a gadget guy. His first three touches went for a combined negative 13 yards. Then he dropped his fourth touch. What is it about the way these guys get into the lineup that they have to be gadget guys first, even when it's not working, when I know there are snaps where Jaden Harrison deserves to be on the field as an every down receiver?
Well, that's a good point. So what it is, I mean, Vandy probably has their all down guys and people like Cam Johnson, you know, Alonzo, like they have their guys that they know they want to be every down. And the only way they can get these other guys reps is by putting them in certain packages where, you know, the freshman will run the jet sweep. And that's usually what's causing, like, I know they did it in the red zone where it's, you know, causing loss for yardages and stuff like that. If the defense reads it, I mean, it's a good play. We use it all the time in our games against Tennessee in the red zone, and it worked out well. But LSU saw it coming, and they read it well. And then, you know, they made the play on the edge. So it's things like that where they want the young guy to get reps, and they can't just put him over the guys who they know are, you know, he's a young talent, and it might go like that later in the season. You know, they have the seniors and the experienced guys out there making the plays because they know what to do. But if this kid truly is more talented, you'll see his time go up as the season goes up, especially if they're not getting the results they want to. But it's always the safe bet as the coach to play the guys you know what you're going to get rather than, you know, the potential home run, but he might also, you know, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. They might not be comfortable with him taking all the snaps yet or whatever, or he could be, and he's fighting for it. That's just the deal. And when you're the younger guy, it's typically an uphill battle. Like I look at Tua, like he clearly came out to be, you know, the top guy at Alabama. You know, it's like, why was this guy ever on the bench? But Jalen Hurts had that cemented senior status. So it's tough, and that might be the situation that they're in right now with those skill guys. Because we got some good older skill guys, but so we don't get to see these young guys, and when we do, it's in these packages, and when they're in these packages, it doesn't look that impressive. But as the season goes on, and you know if the record's not looking good, you'll see these young guys get more and more involved.
One of the receivers who's playing over Jaden Harrison is an older guy, senior Chris Pierce. You were teammates with him for 2 years. He is a great edge setter. He is a great blocker as a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing about why he's running so many patterns?
Well, he has things like great frame and stuff, but this is also something where, like, sometimes there's casualties in the offense, and I'm trying to think of a good example. Maybe a guy like Caleb Scott when we were playing. Like, Caleb was super fast. I mean, obviously he's the NFL. He was our deep threat on things like a lot of play action passes, but he was also never like in our top three. He wasn't more of our consistent targets. And I mean, when you're running certain routes and you're getting certain looks and, you know, you're 3 to 4 games, 5 games in the season, you're like, wow, this guy, like, he has all this talent. He has all this stuff, but you know, we just haven't gotten the ball to him the way that these defenses have played. And it's really interesting thing. I mean, you see it all the time in the NFL where, you know, receivers will go unnoticed, and then, like, boom, out of nowhere, you know, a quarter, like when Peyton Manning went to Denver, they had that, like, I think his name was Demaryius Thomas. Like, he just came out of nowhere. Everyone was calling him a bust. And then, you know, you just get a different guy that's used to different routes and different looks, and all of a sudden this guy does better than this guy. So I use the Caleb example of a guy who was obviously NFL talent who just, like, fell victim to just circumstance or crazy things where the ball just doesn't end up in, you know, it just doesn't happen. You know, Vanderbilt's obviously trying to run the pro style. So they'll do things like if it's first and 10, they're much higher percentage to run than pass. You know, we're not the spread, so we're not airing it out every now and then. And when we do go deep, you know, it usually goes to, it goes to our guy who makes all the crazy catches, but he had a drop. Is his name Amir?
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. So he's been a deep threat recently. And Cam's also, you know, we're trying to get Cam targets. But, yeah, that's just sort of how offensive football ends up sometimes. I mean, you have a skill set, and, you know, and you said it too, like, he's great blocking on the perimeter, so that's what he's going to do. I definitely saw those guys, you know, getting after it. But the speed and space, especially against a team like LSU, is tough.
What do you think about how the tight ends have been involved? Bresnahan's been really, really good.
Yeah, I knew Bresnahan was – Bresnahan's super athletic. I mean, you saw it when he did that toe-tap catch on the outside. I was like, I thought he was going to run out of bounds.
Yeah, he pulled 10 more yards out of it.
Yeah, dude has extreme – you know, he had the touchdown catch in the end zone. So Ben's – and he has a good frame. It's not like he's going to line up. Like Pink was a huge, like, Pink had a good frame, and he could be, like, that guy who was a huge block. But Bresnahan is a tight end where, you know, they could spread him out. I believe I saw that they were doing an empty backfield, so, like, just an 11 personnel, one running back in the backfield with the O-line, and then they would have Bresnahan in the trips formation out there.
Yeah.
So it's someone that they feel that he's so athletic they could spread the field out that way, while still staying in tight end personnel, you know, to draw. If they stay in tight end personnel, they'll have a linebacker covering him instead of, you know, a defensive back, and it'll change the defense personnel, and Vanderbilt might want to run out of that eventually. So that's the little chess games that a guy like Bresnahan can give you when you have that athletic of a tight end out there, to where they don't want a little guy covering him, and it creates a mismatch when a big guy has to go out there. And then, you know, Bresnahan has the speed. Obviously, he has the athleticism to go up and catch the ball, and that's why that end zone touchdown worked.
And that comes with personnel a little bit, too, dictating tempo, not allowing the defense to sub. If you have a matchup you like, or just a set of 11 you like on defense versus five eligibles you have on the field, you can just stick with that. And I feel like they've kind of ridden with a similar group most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you also want to... You don't want to get too fancy, too. Like, if it comes down to it, you do what you work in practice. You know, you don't want to change the game plan. You don't want to do last second substitutions. So Vanderbilt might, you know, this is what they're practicing and this is what they go out with. You know, if you're an experienced team, you can make some drastic changes at halftime. But just know that what we're seeing offensively for Vanderbilt is probably what we're going to see all season. Like, even though the screen game isn't working, we're probably going to still try and run screens, you know, because we have a true freshman quarterback, and we need to keep doing the same things and hopefully get better at them as the season goes on, because you can't just change multiple things and expect it to work. That's just not how it's going to work. So people can get mad at the offensive style, or why are we not making changes? Because we're going to see these same personnel groups the whole season. So that's what I'm expecting, at least. So expect Bresnahan to be that spread type of guy. Don't expect anybody else to come in and, you know, be a super stacked. And there was a few times where we did stack the line ourselves through the power backs, but we're running it in between the tackles. That's more for show, to spread the team out, or to spread the defense out also.
Bruno Reagan, great stuff. This is so fun to talk about it at this level with you.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I can do it justice. I mean, I've been in the game for a while, so that's just all the stuff that comes off the top of my head. I'm also a fan, too. Like I like watching and analyzing stuff. But at the same time, you know, I like kicking my feet up and just watching my buddies go out there and play well, because that's who these people are. I mean, Coach Mason, staff, they're all family to me, basically. So I try not to be too critical. I try to just have fun with it, too. But I also like to, you know, analyze what they're doing, because it's just fun to me also. So.
It shows. And there was a, by the way, a big cardboard cutout of your buddy Grant Miller, presumably put up by his parents in one of the hotel windows during the game.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Grant, so Grant's parents are going watching at the hotel? Nice. I thought that was super interesting. I saw that some LSU fans were trying to use the parking lot, but the police kicked them out. So I guess
yeah.
by the hotel rooms if you want to watch, if you want to be a non-student watching the games.
Yeah, we will. We'll see if parents get to come in next week. I'm not sure if that's on the table or not, but I think it was already October for this game, but the start of October was the change of at least the metro government timeline. I assume it's the university that's making these decisions, not the city of Nashville,
yeah,
like it is for the Titans. But we'll see about that. Yeah, but he was in the penthouse. Tyler Steen was in the penthouse of the hotel watching himself play from high above.
Nice.
Bruno, you're the man. Thanks so much for this. We will talk to you in a couple weeks after a couple more games.
No problem. Yeah, hopefully we'll get to play against some, you know, East teams, not the returning national champs, and we'll get to really see, because it was a promising week one, and you know it was a tough week two. So we'll see how the team rolls out. Hopefully, get some wins.
Bruno Reagan, the greatest. Love talking football with him. He takes it about 50 levels past what I could ever dream of doing, just because of how much he's lived with all of this. Again, Bruno was on the Vanderbilt football team from 2014 to 2018, starting right guard and center. He'll be on the show every other Monday throughout the season to talk about Vandy football and what he's seeing, and what he's seeing from the fan side and what he's seeing from the analyst side. I love how he balances those two in his head as well. Bruno went to Clarksville High School and is also a high-level judo competitor, in addition to being an XFL lineman for the St. Louis Battlehawks this past spring and an elite beer shotgunner in a Battlehawk uniform. We're going to take a break here on the podcast, come back, get a little bit deeper into some specific points of this matchup between Vanderbilt and LSU this past weekend, which the Tigers won 41-7 at Dudley Field. Talk about Javion Marlow looking good once again. Talk about Vandy's DBs not looking so good at times in coverage. Ken Seals struggling to get things going. And also, is it already kicker competition time? It just might be. Vanderbilt falls to 0-2. We'll get a little bit deeper into the weeds of the loss against LSU coming up next. You're anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. It's the Anchor Down Podcast on ESPN. 102.5 The Game.
This is the Anchor Down Podcast.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name's Max Herz. It's Monday, October 5th. We're talking about Vanderbilt football's 41-7 loss against LSU yesterday. Our former Commodore recurring O-lineman guest Bruno Reagan joined us in the first segment. If you missed any of that or want to hear it again, you can hear everything we've ever done by searching the Anchor Down Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. More of the game recap, and we went through some of these things with Bruno. Vanderbilt trailed 21-7 at halftime in this game. This game was a couple of plays away from being a heck of a lot closer. Mentioned that it was actually pretty close at halftime, 21-7 LSU leading Vandy in a game that would end up being 41-7. And Vanderbilt, I thought, had a chance to score on this specific play. LSU started with the ball. Vanderbilt defense did a great job to force a three and out, including a stop on a third and one to get the ball right back less than 2 minutes into the half, trailing by 14, chance to score right out of the locker room, even though they did not win the coin toss. Commodores were a little deep in their own territory, started at their own 16-yard line after a good punt by Zach Von Rosenberg. Third and six at the 16. The possession started at the 12. This play was at the 16-yard line. Javion Marlow peels out of the backfield up the right sideline. Vandy had been running a lot of running back screens. You heard Bruno talking about how many of those screen passes they've used early on in this season. This one was not a screen. Marlow took off. He peeled out to the outside and was wide open, and Seals hit him perfectly, and Marlow dropped the football. Would have been a gain of bare minimum 50. Would have taken Vanderbilt close to the red zone. I maintain there was a chance that Marlow goes on that one. So if Vanderbilt ends up scoring on that drive, it's either 21-10 or 21-14. And Marlow's been maybe the best player on the team. The running back who's done pretty much all the work for Vanderbilt, he's been great. He's averaging between 4 and 5 yards a carry through two games, over 140 rushing yards. He's been solid. He's a big piece, but there are still little issues. He made a mistake, and there are some other parts of this offense that just simply aren't fitting right now. This is what Derek Mason had to say about the offense after the game.
I think what you see are just pieces of an offense, man, that's really working towards trying to figure out, man, exactly like what it could do. I think, again, when you look at the time of possession, even in this ball game, it doesn't mean a lot in a ball game like this that looks a little, you know, lopsided in score. But, I mean, it just shows, man, that there's opportunity for ball control here, which means that, man, if you can control the clock, if you can keep your defense off the field, you can play better on special teams. Okay, man, and put points on the board. There's a formula there that this team can build off of. So, you know, as we continue to move forward, we're going to have to be more dynamic in this league. We're going to have to put points on the board.
The time of possession is huge, and it's been in favor of Vanderbilt's offense in both games. Against Texas A&M, they outpossessed the Aggies by 7 full minutes in a game that came down to the finish and was a one-possession game. While this game against LSU was close, let me rephrase that. During the period of this game when Vanderbilt versus LSU was close, the Commodores were dominating TOP. Vanderbilt had the ball for 20 minutes in the first half. 20 out of 30 minutes, Vanderbilt had the football against LSU. That is huge. Said it last week, I'll say it again as the trend continues. And as it became a blowout and LSU ran out the clock, TOP evened out for the game. Vandy won by a minute and a half. But when this game was close, Vanderbilt had the ball a ton. And this is a stat that shows why. Again, bringing it back to how good Marlowe has been. Derek Mason has now coached 50 SEC games at Vanderbilt in 6-plus seasons. In just 3 of those 50 SEC football games, Vanderbilt has had 2 guys with 15 or more rushing attempts. It has only happened 3 times out of 50. The first time, the 2016 season opener against South Carolina when Ralph Webb and Kari Blassingame did it. The other two, the first 2 games of 2020. Javion Marlowe and Jamari Wakefield have each had more than 15 touches on the ground in each of Vanderbilt's 2 games to start the season. And it's working. The great equalizer, time of possession, Jordan Rogers talked about it a ton during the broadcast this week, and I thought he was right. Vanderbilt is playing with tempo and getting to the line quickly, but they're not necessarily snapping it quickly. They're letting the clock roll. They're using the great equalizer in a season where they could be underdogs in every single game they play. So we'll see if that continues. I'm a little bit hesitant to praise that unabashedly because I don't think Jamari Wakefield's doing a great job. I want Keon Henry Brooks to be that other running back getting big touches alongside Marlowe. Wakefield hasn't done much for me. Didn't do much for me last year and 2 years ago when he was getting carries instead of Keyshawn Vaughn, which was also ridiculous. This not as ridiculous, especially with Henry Brooks out. It's fine. But I think seeing the 3 running backs instead of just the 2 will be even more helpful for Vanderbilt. And I think the ground game needs to continue to be a priority. One other moment where Vanderbilt blew a chance to make it close once again. End of the first half. It was also 21-7 at this point as we roll a bit back in time. Pearson Cook, with what I imagine is the shortest missed field goal in Vanderbilt football modern history. I tried to look this up. I couldn't find it. Or I didn't want to go back far enough. Anyway, he missed a 22-yard field goal with the line of scrimmage at the 4-yard line. Wide left. Walk-on punter is your place kicker, Pearson Cook. Derek Mason said he won the job in camp. He missed the shortest field goal in the game. Right before the half. Vanderbilt wasn't starting with the ball. They needed points. That was with under 20 seconds to go in the first half. He missed a 22-yard field goal. Vanderbilt continues to not be able to recruit kickers. Riley Gay was a former walk-on. Pearson Cook was once a walk-on. I don't know what's going on. And on the touchdown, Vanderbilt's only touchdown of the game, which made it 14-7. Cook almost missed the extra point.
And he didn't miss it wide. He almost missed it short. The ball may have been tipped, but there were issues on the line. Connor Mignone didn't know that he was still on the field goal team, I guess, since he was pulled on that drive as they shuffled the offensive line around. He got on the field with like 10 on the play clock. Vanderbilt only had 8 guys on the line with the holder and the kicker. So I don't know if we can pin that all on Cook, but the hold and snap seemed fine. I don't know. I would like to say there should be a kicking competition this week, but if Javon Rice wasn't good enough to beat Cook in the first place, and what I don't know could have been much of a competition, if those are the options and Cook is kicking the way he has on 2 extra point length attempts, he nearly missed one and he missed the other. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do. You're already using a walk-on converted punter. So that's really bad. That was really, really bad. Derek Mason had some thoughts on Ken Seals, his freshman quarterback, after the loss, talking specifically about a red zone interception he threw once the game was pretty much already out of reach.
As I talked to Ken just a little bit ago, I just said, listen, we're gonna grow as you grow. We're going to go as you go. But the biggest thing that we got to be able to do is just make sure you can protect us. I know you want to make plays, but you got to understand when we're in scoring position, you know, let's take the points. You know, there are no 24-point plays. So the biggest thing is, you know, man, go when you need to go. Manage the game when you need to manage the game. And make sure, man, that your offense always walks away with points. Because that in doing so, okay, man, you feel like, man, we've been able to make drives and put something towards it. It's just the investment piece. And I think he said, Coach, you're right. So I know he gets it. And I just got to let him play, man. But we got to minimize the mistakes and make sure, man, that we can maximize, you know, some of these opportunities that we're getting, because we're getting some good looks. But you mean both in special teams and on the offensive side of the ball, man, we just got to maximize opportunities in the red zone.
So when Ken Seals threw that pick, I don't disagree with Derek Mason in general, but when he threw that pick, it was 34-7 in the third quarter. And if you're throwing that away and taking points, first of all, you're down 27. Second of all, you're kicker missed a 22-yard field goal an hour earlier. So I don't think this was the right situation for him to say that against his quarterback. But I guess I agree with the premise. Seals hasn't had a chance to do much. At least he didn't this week. The O-line wasn't very good. His go-to target from game one wasn't really open much. There just wasn't much in the pass game that he could have done. So I agree with the premise, just not the application of what Derek Mason said there. One thing I wholeheartedly agree with is that Ken Seals has the best football family in the world. On Twitter, his father, Robert Seals, who is absolutely jacked, by the way. This is a very built Texan man, Robert Seals, Ken's dad. His mom, Corinna, and his sister, Trinity, got one of the hotel rooms at the hotel that overlooks Vanderbilt Stadium, got a window room that would look out to the game, and they lined the window up with Christmas lights so that their son would know where they were. And when Vanderbilt scored their touchdown and Ken Seals threw it to Ben Bresnahan, they were flashing the Christmas lights in the window. So awesome. So awesome. That is a family that's made itself known. I believe Corinna, Ken's mom, tweeted something along the lines of, Vandy football, are we allowed to tailgate this year? If we don't tailgate, my husband might die. Or my husband won't know what to do with his life. Something really funny. A great family, a great quarterback. We want to see more from Ken. We want him to have a chance to do more. That is for sure. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Vanderbilt's defense in this game. Left a little bit to be desired on the back end. Donovan Kaufman continues to excel. Frank Coppett debuts the number 0 for Vandy football and causes some problems. That's next. You're anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. It's the Anchor Down Podcast on ESPN. 102.5 The Game.
This is the Anchor Down Podcast.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Max Herz. I'm your host. Talking about Vanderbilt football's 41-7 loss to LSU on Saturday at Vanderbilt Stadium. Commodores will be home again this week in front of what we're not sure will be a students-only crowd yet. I imagine it will be, but I don't know that for sure. Commodores hosting Gamecocks of South Carolina 11 a.m. gods have blessed us again with the worst game time in the world for a game on the SEC Network. Again, 11 a.m. Central on Saturday. Vanderbilt home for the second straight week. 0-2 Commodores, 0-2 Cock-a-doodle-doo. So we'll see what happens with two winless teams getting together. And two members of the Rocker family going to be in the same place. I don't know if Kumar will be allowed in since he's not a senior and they're only letting senior students in. I think student athletes might get a little bit of a pass there and be able to move up the list. At least I would hope so. If not, Kumar's cutout will be there because they had cutouts of every single national champion player in Vanderbilt history, both baseball teams, both bowling teams, and the 2015 women's tennis team. Every headshot from all of those teams were there. I took some selfies. You can see them on my Twitter, which is at MaxHersTalks. I got one with Baby Dansby, Baby Buehler, young Brian Reynolds, who doesn't really look that much younger than he does currently, and Kumar Rocker from last year. And then I took one in between a very funny duo. I also got one with Tim Corbin. A very funny duo that would not be happy to be sitting next to each other, even though they are actually very good friends in real life, because they give each other grief. Xander Wheel and Rhett Wiseman were next to each other because they did it in alphabetical order. And if you saw some of the videos from the College World Series in 2015, Xander's impression of Rhett Wiseman is top-notch. But I don't know if you'd want to sit next to him at a game for four straight hours. But he's stuck with him for the entire season. And also because they did in alphabetical order, Tim Corbin is in between Cooper Davis and Phil Clark in the 2019 team. I don't know if Corbs can handle that either. Corbs loves both those guys, but there'd be a lot of ribbing going on in that trio if they were actually in the stands together. Promised we'd talk a little bit of Vanderbilt football defense this segment. That is what we are going to do. One of Derek Mason's first post-game comments was a negative review of what his defense did against LSU.
At this game, I thought our guys just looked, a little off. I mean, finding, angles. I mean, there were some plays out there to be made. A lot of missed tackles early, and you work on the fundamentals. You go through these things, but we had a lot of, opportunities early in this ball game to close out and have some good contact on tackle for loss, and we didn't. I thought we didn't cut off the edges very well either. And as our edges got soft, and the ball seemed to leak out. And when you looked at the pass rush, like tonight, I thought they did a good job. We tried a couple of different things, man. We put Dio and Mint on the same side, and they slid to those guys, and we didn't make the adjustment fast enough, man. But I thought they had a plan for not letting their quarterback get hit. They wanted to make sure that they got the ball out of his hands. A lot of it was RPO, and some of it came off play action, which was Max Pro shots. And again, I thought their game plan was a good game plan for us. We just got to continue to get better at doing the little things, because that was more about fundamentals tonight than anything else.
That's Derek Mason on Vanderbilt's defense in the LSU loss on Saturday. A lot of interesting stuff there, and I've said this before on the show for those of you who listen every week, Anchor Down Podcast here on 102.5 The Game. I love when Derek Mason gets deep into the football terminology like that. That's what we try to do with these players who we have on every week on Thursday. Coach Mason is not always that way. He leans on the coaching cliches sometimes, but I thought that analysis, especially of what Miles Brennan was allowed to do by the Vanderbilt defense, was very good. So Brennan, his first win as the LSU starter after sitting behind Etling and Burrow the last 3 years. 23 out of 37, 337 passing yards, 4 tutties, and a pick for the LSU signal caller. Derek Mason said they let him climb the pocket too much. There was pressure on the outside on the tackles, but there was not much interior push. He wants more inside push. And the throws were quick. Some RPO, they got the ball out of his hands quickly, and because the interior pressure hadn't come yet on those quick throws, he was able to step up and into those throws. And they weren't long throws either, a lot of them. So that helps. And then the other part I enjoyed hearing Derek Mason say was the Max Pro shots out of play action. That means that LSU saw on film from Vanderbilt week one, they only had one game to look at Ted Roof's new Vanderbilt defense. We're going to keep everybody in. We're going to slow down this blitz. This front seven got pressure on Texas A&M and Kellen Mond. They forced turnovers. They forced fumbles by the quarterback and in the backfield. So we're going to slow this rush down. We're going to send out two or three receivers. We're going to keep a back in on play action to block. We're going to keep a tight end in to block.
And we're going to go 3-on-4. We're going to go 3-on-5. However many DBs Vanderbilt keeps back, which is usually 5, by the way, it has been so far this year. So I should say 3-on-5 before I say 3-on-4. We're going to take those shots, and guess what? It worked. It worked really, really well. They went strength on weakness as they slowed down Vanderbilt's strength on defense, which is the front. They went after the weakness right now, which is coverage in the DBs. Donovan Kaufman played mostly safety this week. So the cornerbacks were Alan George, Randall Haney, and Elijah Hamilton, with a little bit of Justin Harris as well. Hamilton was the nickel, and he was involved in coverage on the play of the day that sums this all up. Touchdown, they made it 14-0 LSU, 2.5 minutes into the second quarter. Terrace Marshall, his first of 2 touchdown catches in the game. Terrace Marshall and Jontre Kirkland both had 2 touchdown receptions each out of the 5 LSU touchdowns. The other one was on the ground from John Emery Jr., who was very good in the game, 12 carries. That's it, 12 carries for 103 and a score himself. He had the score that made it 41-7, which was the final, as the Commodores lost to the Tigers in the second game of the season on Saturday. Here on the Anchor Down podcast on 102.5 The Game, Max Herr is with you. This play, though, that sums up everything that went wrong in the Vanderbilt defensive backfield. Frank Coppett, who did not play in the first game, first Commodore to wear number 0, beautiful, loved the number 0, but he was not very good on this play. Marshall was being guarded by Hamilton out of the left slot, went over the middle, and Coppett read the route. He read it. He was there. And I guess he just over-pursued because he went too far, and instead of taking out the ball, he took out Hamilton. He took out the corner. And it was a touchdown. So if you're LSU and you can score like that, one receiver into two DBs, one of them is a helping safety, yeah, I think I'm going to keep a guy or two in and block. I'm going to take my chances with my strong group of wide receivers, even if Jamar Chase isn't playing this year. They spread the ball around. 337 passing yards. Not a great total for Vanderbilt to allow after they held Texas A&M under 200 the week prior. Donovan Kaufman was very good, true freshman DB, 4-star recruit, played mostly nickel corner in the A&M game. He played mostly safety and was often the single high safety against LSU. He also led the team in tackles with 10. Not exactly what you want, but Vanderbilt's safeties have led the team in tackles most of the year. It was Deshaun Jerkins who led him last week, and that hasn't been uncommon in Vanderbilt defenses as of late. Demetri Moore did play, was a contributor, was second in the team in tackles this time around with 8, 5 solo, tied with Jerkins for second most behind Kaufman, who also had a great kick return in this game. 58 yards right up the middle for Donovan Kaufman, who said after the game in the postgame press conference, LSU was sending everybody up the left side. They left the middle open. They were daring us, and the coverage was good. So good to see Kaufman involved in two phases of the football game. True freshman making a name for himself and playing heavy snaps. He played every snap but 2 in the first game, according to ESPN Stats and Info. Snap count for the LSU game not available yet. I'll have that on Thursday is when I will acquire it, but Thursday's podcast will be out before then. So I'm going to try and talk about that kind of in retrospect as the week goes on. Might start tweeting those out as well as I see things of interest. That's all we've got for today. Thanks so much for joining us here on 102.5 The Game. We'll be back on Thursday with our weekly Vandy football player interview. We will let you know who that's going to be with later on in the week. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Pods. And hear us over the air Monday nights from 8 to 9 on 102.5 The Game. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. It's the Anchor Down podcast on ESPN. 102.5 The Game. We'll be right back.